Welcome to Empire Building. I'm Wendy Papazan, and together with my four co-hosts, we bring you weekly unfiltered conversations about leadership, growing a big empire, and living on your own terms.
I'm Kimber Lovett-Minkiti. We are investors and wealth builders with over $75 million in combined net worth.
I'm Sarah Reynolds. We are visionaries who've built more than 50 businesses with over $122 million in annual revenue.
I'm Tiffany Fikes. We've led thousands of people and do it all while being pretty good moms.
And I'm Seychelle Van Poole. We are your podcast to learn how to build big businesses and even bigger lives. Welcome to Empire Building. I'm your co-host, Seychelle Van Poole. And on our podcast, we talk about growth in your business, growth in your wealth, and today especially, growth in your personal journey. And I could not be more honored to have a very special guest with us today. It is the amazing Charlotte Johnson. She not only runs a very successful real estate business, one of the best in Louisiana, but on top of that, her story, I have goosebumps. Her story is one that you need to hear. It's one that you need to know about. And it's one that I think you're going to want to share with a friend or family member that might be able to resonate with her too. And so Charlotte, I'm so excited for us to have a conversation today, and we're just going to have a lot of fun and a really real, vulnerable conversation today, and I cannot wait to jump in with you.
Thank you. Me too, I think.
I can't wait. So today we have a lot I want to cover because I think your story is really powerful. And it's one where you didn't come from a privileged life.
Not at all, no.
And not only that, but how many times did you move as a kid?
Well, I went through, just in my teen years, basically moved twice a school year. Wouldn't be able to spend a whole school year in the same school.
Holy cow. So you never finished at a school where you started?
No. Not until I became a ward of the state. Then I went into my sophomore year and graduated from the school that I started at then.
So until you were what, 16?
Yeah, 15, 16, yeah.
Your mom was very young when she had you.
My mom was 15 when she had me.
Right, yes. Very young.
Yes.
And at 15, I mean, you know, you think about any of us, like none of us have life figured out at 15.
No.
I'm sure that was not easy for you, not easy for her.
I think it took me till I was 40 to understand the implications of her being a 15-year-old mom,
yeah,
because it took me that long to get over being angry, right?
Of course.
And you have to get over being angry before you can understand where someone is or isn't.
Some people never get over the anger.
Right. Exactly.
That was a choice you made.
Yes, it was.
And you had siblings.
I did.
Well,
I
you do. Still did.
Yeah.
Wait. Sorry, siblings. Sorry. Still have them.
Sorry, Carol. Sorry, yeah. Audra. Sorry, Maynard. Yes.
We still have siblings.
We
you
have
actually,
siblings.
You're quite close to.
I am very close to my siblings. I'm the oldest. Thank gosh, because my mom was 15. I hate to think if she had them before me, but yeah.
You became the mini mom.
Mini mom and major mom, because on top of my mom being 15 years old, my mom was, now they would diagnose her as a manic depressive. So she would do nothing but work and sleep. That was my mom's life. When I was very young, when I was in kindergarten, in first grade, my father was in Vietnam. And so he did two or three tours of Vietnam over there. And so I would be the one taking care of my brother and my sister at the time, because Audra is 7 years younger than me. And she didn't know how to cope.
Yeah. A young mom, all of a sudden now your significant other, is now at war.
And she was in Wisconsin and she's from Louisiana. So she was there around his family. She was in Illinois with Audra because we were in Illinois when Audra was born. So that was when he had come back. So, but yeah, she was in Wisconsin around his family, not nowhere around anybody that she knew.
That must have felt really lonely.
Yeah, very lonely.
How did you become a ward of the state?
So my mother has not had the best choice in men throughout her life. And my father, the only person I've ever known is my father. So my biological father, I did not meet until I was 18. And my stepfather, who I considered my father, she married him when I was about a year and a half old because my sister is 20 months younger than me. But he was basically the only father I knew. Well, he sexually abused me from the time I was 5 years old until I was 15. When I was 15, my mother and my brother, who was a little narc, by the way, told my mother that I had a boy in the house. And my mother was, some people don't grow past a time in their life where life defined them. So my mother is still at 78 years old, still 15, right? And so she was giving me bad time about, you know, I was this, I was that. And I turned around and looked at her. I'd had it. I said, if you want to know why I'm not a virgin, you go ask that SOB that you sleep with every night. And I walked out the door and I called social services and said, I'm ready. Because they had been coming to me. So that was why we moved so much. Whenever a teacher got wind of what was happening or whenever somebody got wind of what had happened, he would move us to another school district.
So not only did you not have a safe environment at home, but you also then every time there was a hope of creating some sort of security or safety for you, it was ripped.
Right, exactly. So if I had a favorite teacher and maybe I confided in that teacher, the next thing you know, a month later, we were moved. Because so abusers abuse and they keep people afraid to talk through what will happen to other people, not what will happen to them. So they will use things like, if your mother ever finds out, she will kill herself. And my earliest childhood memory of my mother is people gathered around the house trying to get me to open up the door because she had taken a bunch of pills and was laying in the middle of the floor. And they're trying to get me to open up the door with my 4-year-old sister and my 1-year-old brother there. So I believe that because that's what I saw.
That was your truth. And so then he used that against you.
Right. And he would use that. And that's very typical of what abusers do. And I always tell people, if you see a little girl or a little boy in school that is hanging away from everybody else and is very quiet, or if they're like me, which you should never call me quiet, I was the one who was always in trouble. I acted out so bad in school that teachers quit teaching when they had me in their class.
Because you couldn't let it stay inside you. You had to get it out some way.
They thought that I was, maybe I couldn't learn. So they had psychologists come in. They would film me during classrooms. And then they had me take all these tests. And they turned around and said, you're testing at genius level.
This surprises me zero.
Why aren't you doing the work?
Well, you were bored.
And I was angry. It was anger more than anything. It was anger more than anything. What do you do as a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old child when something is happening to you that you know isn't right, that you hate, that hurts, that's painful, that, and it's such a secret? How do you get that out?
This is something that I am so attracted to you over, is that you have an incredibly strong moral compass and you are willing to speak up when something doesn't feel right.
And I have been that way. My father and my mother did not get her high school GED until she was in her 30s and still struggles with reading and stuff. And she'll call me and spell something out for me to tell her what it is. And my father, on the other hand, was extremely intelligent, and I have lived with looking evil in the face. And because of who I am, I felt that. I knew. Audra was born. So I was 8 years old and we had lived on a turkey farm in Wisconsin when he got out of the military. So a turkey farm is just like a cow farm, except you don't milk them. And I told my mother one day, I said, I can't keep going and helping because he's going to kill me one day and leave me on the side of the road.
For you to be able to find the words to voice that is really difficult.
He was evil, right?
Yeah.
And she didn't believe, but she knew. And those two things can be true at the same time.
I always say, like, joy and pain can coexist. And I think, you know, we always talk about how something's good or bad or right or wrong. And I think the older I get, the more I realize how much gray exists where somebody can believe they are being a good person and they're doing bad things, or somebody can be a bad person and be really great. It's not yes or no, good or bad. There's a lot of gray that can coexist in that.
And on the outside, things can look so, I mean, on the outside, we were, as children, we had everything any child could ever want. That was the outside. It's kind of like, you know, don't peek behind the curtain because you're not going to like the wizard very much.
One, and you said something to me before today, which I really loved, which you said, everybody has to have faith in something. And your faith is very important to you. But that phrase of everybody has to have faith in something, tell me more about that and what that means in your faith.
For me, in my faith, I use the word God, and I use those words, and I'm here to tell everybody here, whatever it is that you believe in, whatever your God is, that's who I'm talking about. For me, it was that I firmly believe that God knows what's going to happen in our lives. And God knew that I was going to go through this period. And I believe that God gives every single one of us the gifts that we need to not only survive the lives that we're going to live, but to be able to thrive in the life we're going to live. And we have to listen. I can remember being 11 years old, getting off of a school bus, long dirt road in Wisconsin, sunshine, birds singing, looking up, and I just felt God everywhere. And instead of saying, "Ooh, I love you, God," I said, "I don't care what he does. He's never going to break me."
And I think that's a good moral for what I've seen in your world. So you fast forward into your career, right? And how many different careers have you had?
So many.
Like, this has got to be what,
so,
six?
Yeah, so many. First of all, I'm old. That's why I don't shine under the lights, guys. Okay, I'm old. Second.
And you look fabulous.
Thank you. But yes, so I have that personality that if I get bored, I worked one job in my life that I said if I had to go to work one more day, I was going to shoot myself. And I took a buyout. It was when I decided I was going to get a degree in computer information systems and work in tech because I knew everything there was about business, so they couldn't teach me anything. So I was going to get something and do that. And I went to work for a internet company in their tech support department as a manager.
I can't see you enjoying that, Charlotte.
Understatement. And when they merged with another company and they said, "Hey, do you want to go to India?" I said, "Oh, no. Where do I sign for the buyout?"
So that one you didn't enjoy, but you've actually had a lot of things you really did enjoy. So tell me about those.
So I took the money from that and got a semi-truck, and I started a trucking company. And I have over 3 million miles myself all across the U.S. and Canada. Plus, I had 17 trucks at one time. So, and I did that from 2005 until January 1st of 2017 when I got into real estate.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had no clue I was getting in real estate, by the way, you guys. I sold my truck. My niece called me and said, "I want my kids to have the same experience with Aunt Charlotte that I did." And I said, "What are you saying?" She says, "I want you to move back to Louisiana." I said, "You're killing me, Smalls."
Oh.
So I moved back. So I sold my truck, didn't have a clue what I was going to do, had an experience with a real estate agent that was less than stellar, said, "Hold my beer," and got my license. And that's what I did. And since then, I've been the top agent in my area.
I think that's Keller Williams' new slogan: "Hold my beer, I got my and get my real estate license."
I want a T-shirt like that. Yeah, hold my beer, I get my real estate license. But yeah, I was told when I was much younger, I had a mentor. So this is the amazing thing about God in my life is that when I was in my 20s, I lived in Louisiana for a little while, and during that time, I worked for McDonald's. Yay, go McDonald's! They were the best training program.
Yes.
There was management training development program in the 80s they were teaching in colleges, right? And so I went to work at one McDonald's. I became an assistant manager. I got fired because I had an egg fight with all of the employees after closing off the roof of the McDonald's, but it was fun. And then after I had to rethink my decision and be like, "I really like working at McDonald's though," you know, there was another gentleman who was opening McDonald's over in Amite, Louisiana. It was a brand new McDonald's, and it was a big to-do because he was an African-American owner. And I got on my motorcycle. I had a motorcycle at the time. I lived in the French Quarter in New Orleans. I got on my motorcycle, and I drove over to Amite, Louisiana. So I pull up to McDonald's on this motorcycle. I walked in. I told him what I did. I said, "This is who I am. This is what I did. This is what I got fired. No, I'll never do it again." And his name was Melvin Levitt. And Mr. Melvin was amazing. He was a speechwriter for President Jimmy Carter. He made his money in real estate in Mobile, Alabama. He played football. And at that time, I didn't care enough to know which Alabama football team he played for, but I probably should call his wife and find out. But he was a mentor to me in so many ways. And one of the things, when he hired me, he says, "I'm hiring 10 other people, you're all assistant managers. One of you guys will be the store manager." I worked my butt off.
That's all you needed.
I learned everything I could about McDonald's. And I remember one day I was crying. I was pulling a Gary Vee and I was crying to him that people were picking on me. I wasn't really. I was like, I don't understand. He's like, he told me, he said, Charlotte, there's two things you got to remember in life. One, the cream always rises to the top. He said, two, those things you feel in the back are the knives that people are trying to use to pull themselves over you. Don't let them. He said, just shake them off. I said, okay. So he taught me that anybody can get the big things, right? You can walk into a restaurant, anybody can get the big things. It's the little things, the details that make the difference. So by the time I finished with him, I'd gotten McDonald's Outstanding Store Manager of the Year from McDonald's Corporation for that restaurant and everything. I ended up supervising his other restaurants. I moved back to Minnesota. He called me on the 800 number of the bank I worked at. I said, what are you doing? He says, I need you. I said, what? He says, I need to get more stores and they're not to the level that they need to be and I need you. I said, Melvin, I just bought my first house in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm not coming back. He said, come see me. Flew down there. He paid me a lot of money, gave me a company car, got my apartment, flew me back to Minnesota. I gave him 1 year. Took me about 2 months and all his restaurants were up. He's able to get more restaurants. I said, in a year, I said, okay, I'm gone. He says, Charlotte, I'll give you 5% of the selling price of all of my restaurants if you stay. I said, Melvin, this is not about money. This is about, it sucks the soul out of me to live here. Because that moral compass I have over what's right and what's wrong, that was a particularly hard place to be in with that, right? Because I don't see things like race, but I do see things like systematic poverty that keeps people down, that doesn't give them an opportunity to get out. I do not believe that everyone in this country has the same opportunity.
Right. And the same beginnings.
And the same beginnings, right? So that was, made it so challenging. But yeah, I loved being a truck driver. I loved working with McDonald's. I loved being in tech support for 5 minutes. I loved, I loved being a radio announcer when I was my first job, 15 years old, the country music radio station in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, WAXX said, Charlotte, you can't win every contest we have. I'm like, they said, will you come and work with us? And so they taught me how to be a radio announcer because I knew more about country music because what things did I have in my life that I could control? I knew everything about every country music singer that was out there that, I swore Loretta Lynn was my mother and gave me up at the hospital for some reason. I mean, I was that if I'm passionate about something, I'm all in.
Hey, you. I want you to know that I see you. You're the woman that's been crushing it for so long. Business success, check. The strong one that everyone depends on, double check. When's the last time you felt like someone had your back? Here's the truth. Building big doesn't mean you should feel lonely inside of what you've created. And being ambitious doesn't mean sacrificing joy, family, or even yourself. But that's the trap so many women fall into because no one gives us the roadmap for having it all. The path you need depends on the stage you're in. What worked when you were just getting started won't carry you into empire level. Too bad most advice out there is one size fits all, and that's why it feels so exhausting. That's why we created our Empire Stage Quiz. In 2 minutes, you'll find out which of the four stages you're in and get clarity on the moves that will help you build the empire you were made for without burning out or going it alone. The quiz is free, takes 2 minutes, and it's the clarity you've been waiting for. Go to herbestlife.com/quiz and find out the right steps to scale your business.
I'm going to dovetail for 2 seconds on your real estate business because I think that's important, but it's not what defines you, right? Like you have some of the highest capacity of any human I know. Your real estate business, you're doing how many deals a year last year?
140. Then I think this last year, 120 something. Yeah.
Yeah. So 140, 120 deals you are doing.
Right.
Them. Not like I have 50 people.
No.
Like
no,
you are doing it. And all the while you're a professional poker player at the same time.
Semi-professional. When I'm professional, I'll quit.
Okay, well, you are a pro to me,
okay.
But semi-pro is what we can technically call it. But so you have all these different things that you're doing, and yet at the same time, you found yourself lonely.
Yes.
By all accounts, you are making a great income. You have an incredible business with people that know, like, love, and trust you. You've got this great side hustle, which I'm going to say is quite time-consuming, of being a semi-pro professional player. You give back to amazing charities. Like all of these things that you do and support your community and you're amazing in your family. I could go on. And yet at a certain point, you found yourself feeling lonely? What happened with that? Is it always like you're just like, I'm just going to always do that?
So I think that I intimidate the hell out of a lot of people, right? And people like me and they don't think that I need anything or I don't need anybody, right?
That's really important.
And that's
I think a lot of leaders and a lot of successful people make the mistake and assume, well, they're fine.
Right.
They don't need anything. They're successful on their own. And they actually stay farther away from you. Like the more successful you get, the more people stay away. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And I used to think it was because, oh, they're just jealous. And I understand it. And this is, takes age, people. You don't get this when you're 30. You don't get this when you're 40. I'm lucky I got it when I was 60. It's more that they're not jealous. They just don't think that you need anything from them, that there's anything from them that they
could give
to you. Or
that they could contribute.
That they could give to you. Correct? Right. So I met this group of ladies. Actually, this is what happened. KW Cares Family Reunion, when was Miami? 2024?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2024. So 2024 Family Reunion, I won the KW Cares auction for the flagship.
Her Best Life event.
KW Her Best Life event, right. Because I wanted to check you guys out because there were some people in there that I had admired and I looked at and I watched at and I was intrigued. And I'm like, what would it be like to just have a group of people like that that did the same thing you do? And keep in mind, when you are the top producer year after year after year after year after year, nobody competes with you. The teams don't compete with you. I'm out doing teams. I'm out doing, you know, it's like there's nobody who has that same
capability in your market. You had outgrown your local surroundings. Yeah.
And so I did that KW Cares auction, went to the Miami event, heard Kimber's story on stage, and something just broke open. It was like, these are the people that I need to be around. People who can raise you up, can call you out, and can heal you when you're crying. And so you guys got stuck with me. And
lucky enough to get stuck with you is what I'll say.
I have to tell you that no matter what you go through in life, no matter how strong you are in life, no matter how much faith you have in life, you need to have people that you can relate to that are strong enough to peel the layers away so that you can be, for me, vulnerable. Vulnerable is a hard one for me, right? Because my whole life has been just me.
Your whole life has been having to survive.
Right. Compassion, I have that down. I care about people so much. But for my own self, that was the chore.
That is, I think it's one of the most difficult things as a strong person, whatever your gender is. I think being willing to be vulnerable in a room is probably one of the scariest things that strong people can do.
So I come out of truck driving, guys. I talk like Gary Vee, and I come out of truck driving and I'm surrounded by all these women who are like totally just like, hi, Seychelle and Kimber and Sarah and Amber and all of these women that are just so put together. And I'm like, yep, not quite sure if this is the right room, but we're going to try.
You did. And so I have this last question for you, because I think a lot of people feel that when they walk into a room where they know that there's a something that's attracting them to whatever room it is, right? Like, I feel like I know I need to be in this room, but I have imposter syndrome. I don't know that I fit. I'm not sure this is right for me. What advice would you have somebody who is on that chasm of walking into that next room that is totally going to level them up, but there's that feeling? What would you say to them to help them let their guard down and to walk in?
I would say to take a minute and sit back and listen and feel. Give yourself permission to feel. If you can't feel something for yourself, feel for the person who is speaking, who is sharing something that's extremely hard for them. And when you give yourself that permission to feel and to listen, pretty soon your feelings start to come out about it. And you realize that, wait, these are my people. These people are going through the same things that I go through, or that I would go through if I allowed myself to go through them, right? Because some of us go through life not allowing ourselves to have certain emotions, we just keep moving.
It's easier to move than to feel.
It's easier to move, right?
Absolutely.
And so some of us just keep moving. So I would say stop. Just take a minute and stop.
That is extremely wise, Charlotte, and very brave that you made that choice. And the growth that we have seen in you, the spark that you've always had, but that shines a lot brighter, it's really a gift for us to get to come along on that journey with you.
You guys have been tremendously impactful for me to sit and look. You know, one of the things that happens when you're a truck driver is you gain a lot of weight. One of the things that happens as you get older is you gain a lot of weight, right? So I get in that room with these amazing women and I can take a minute and stop and be vulnerable about how I feel about how I look. And I find out that so many women in this group feel the same way and have felt the same way. And the things that they've done and the way that they have responded. And I think a very visible evidence of being in the room is I'm 65 pounds down since, what, September?
Yeah. In less than 6 months.
Yeah. Just because when you're in a room full of people that you admire like I do, you and so many people in the room. Look, I'm built. I don't fail. And I am not failing in front of you guys. That's just, that is not in my DNA. So if you are, that's what I would tell. Stop. Take a minute to stop and figure out really what it is that you're not comfortable with. And you will be surprised because I promise you in that room, there's going to be at least one, if not five, other people who felt the same way.
Yeah. And you were brave enough to take that leap.
Yeah. And you guys were brave enough to let me in.
We saw it.
Well, I did win my way in.
And that's okay, too. That's okay, too.
Hey, if there's something down in the auction down there, somebody go bid on it.
Because, that's right.
Wait, because seriously, growth orientation, being growth oriented, should never stop. Ray Kroc, you say, I'm going to come back to my McDonald's thing here. When you're green, you're growing. When you're ripe, you're rotten. And every single day, we can reinvent ourselves every single day. I'm going to be better at 70 than I was at 60. And you're never too old. And I would think, well, I can't lose weight because I'm in my 60s now. I'm not going to be able to lose weight.
And now you're the shrinking Charlotte.
Yeah, that's it.
And I'm really, really proud of how you show up, the conscious choice you have made to step into a room that I know is very uncomfortable for you, and the willingness, probably for one of the first times in your life, to truly let your guard down so that we can come wrap around you.
And to not run, because I almost ran.
I know.
I almost ran, right? So after the first year, I walked in, and I was like, I told Amber, I said, I think I'm going to quit. Amber and Ryan turned around and looked at me and said, no, you're not. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. You know, you have to be able to find those people and understand that even when you're terrified of those people, if they're your people, you will know it when you're in that room.
And you're right. The right people will call that out and love you and pull you in, whatever room that is.
Yep. We are not built to go through life without a support system. That's not saying we can't, because I did it my whole life. And I wonder what my life would have looked like if I had this group of people when I was 20.
I mean, look at how far you've come already. I cannot even imagine.
Yeah.
I cannot even imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even close to being done. So but I do think about that sometimes. And
yeah.
So for anybody who's sitting out there who's thinking, I just don't know what direction to go. I don't know what to do. I know I need something. I know I need people. Find those people, whether it's us, whether it's somebody else, just find people that can tell you, girl, pick yourself up.
And let's go.
And let's go. That's it.
Charlotte, that is an amazing message. And if you're listening to this and you're sitting there thinking, gosh, this sounds like something I need, what Charlotte was referencing was we are both involved in a company called Her Best Life. And we have a senior group, is what I would call it, of women that really have taken the next step.
Right. Not old. Not old senior.
We're not talking about the color guard. We're talking about like are at that next level in their life that they want to level it up. And it's called Empire Circle. And so if that's something that's interesting to you, you can go to herbestlife.com and check that out. And we'd love to have an exploratory conversation to see if that's something that's helpful. Or if we're not, we can point you in other directions too.
Yes, absolutely.
But whatever room it is, if you're feeling lonely and you're feeling like you need that extra support, find that room.
Yeah, just find it. Growth doesn't happen accidentally.
No, it has to be very purposeful. And you have been very intentional about that. And I want to thank you for sharing that today, because I think a lot of people need to hear that it is a choice. And by taking that leap, it's amazing what can happen in life. And I'm so proud of you.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate that. I had to make a choice in my life at a young age to not stay angry.
You've made lots of conscious choices.
They're all conscious choices. And I hope that someone listening to this, look, if my story resonates with you, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to anybody.
I love that. And you probably will. So I so appreciate you today, Charlotte. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.